All right. Good morning, all the Eagle FM listeners. The time is 2 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and today is the 16th of March, of May, 2025, and a Friday. Thank you so much for really joining us every day. You're always choosing us. Thank you so much. And this is Early Morning Scoop. This is a program dedicated to providing you with the usual news update on the talking about the economy, entrepreneurship, the public policy, the trade. That's what I give you until the hour of 7:30. And I am Lois Shimi. Now, before I give you that, please do not forget to rather visit our platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Villa Newswire page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House. You find that on a channel, on WhatsApp channel, just for the daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alerts. And like today, the newspaper is out. Please don't forget to rather subscribe and get the newspaper so that you can able to keep yourself informed, actually. So do not also forget to download our app, Eagle FM app. That's available on your Google Play Store and the App Store, and to make sure also you are informed wherever you go, wherever you are. It doesn't matter whether you are outside the country, you can able to tune in through the app, and you can also able to listen to the past shows, beloved. Now, to start off internationally, is that the Central Energy Fund has handed over the leased assets and funds to operationalize South African National Petroleum Company. Now, the SANPC is a newly established state-owned company that merged three CEF group subsidies, I guess, Strategic Fuel Fund and Petro SA, and was officially launched last month. We might take a listen.
The fund has handed over leased assets and 5 billion rand in funding to operationalize the newly established South African National Petroleum Company. According to CEF Group Chair Ayanda Noah, the best viable model for the transaction was by lease and assignment.
We came with a new process that we also believe has never been done in the world, the lease and assign model. And so what happens with the lease and assign model is that we have now an opportunity to ring fence all the assets that are currently not viable. We ring fence them, we leave them behind. And in this case, it's specifically the refinery at Mossel Bay under Petro SA that is ring fenced. It's left behind with the people so that we can have it attended to and fixed. And then the other assets that are in a good condition are then leased across to the SNPC so that they can be leveraged and ensure that we are able to trade as the SNPC. In that process also, there is an opportunity to pay these amounts back to the legacy companies so that they can get some remuneration for having given the SNPC the assets to be leased in order to do their business.
SANPC CEO Godfrey Mwahi says the South African National Petroleum Company will focus on stabilizing the organization as it charts its way into becoming a national energy champion.
The immediate challenge is to stabilize the organization. I think sometimes we get excited and we want to chase growth while there is a leakage behind. So we need to make sure that we close the back door. There is no leakages. And the second thing that we need to do, we need to make sure that we got robust governance processes. Because we made mistakes in the past, right? We corrected those mistakes and we acknowledge where we made mistakes. But actually, there are a lot of good things that we have done. And I think one thing that we don't do well is to talk about the good things that we do. And we keep on saying we need to learn to tell our own narrative. SFF actually was pretty robust and running well. Pretty robust and running well. There were challenges with Petro SA, and we are awake to the fact that we're going to have to deal with those challenges and make sure that we actually are writing a different narrative as we go forward. So We're not going to leave them alone. The next wave, which is a phase two, will actually be dealing with bringing those assets that we left behind and the employees across SNPC so that we've got one single national oil company.
The SANPC says after a series of consultation between organized labor and non-organized labor representatives, 402 employees have been transferred to the new company and are subject to a 12-month cooling-off period to avoid any job losses during the transition period.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Nigeria's Dangote oil refinery has cancelled a planned 30-day maintenance shutdown of its 200,000 barrel per day gasoline production unit originally scheduled for June. We might take a listen to this.
Oil company says it's suspending land transportation to the country's west, including
all miners in the east,
due to deteriorating security conditions. The worst fighting in Libya's capital for years abated today, an hour after the government announced a ceasefire. Ever since the fall of the late leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, Libya has been plagued by insecurity and political instability as political rivals and armed groups compete for control of the first territory. Nigeria's Dangote oil refinery has cancelled June maintenance at its 200,000 barrel per day gasoline-making unit as it completed plant works during an unplanned shutdown from April 7th to May 11th. During the unplanned outage, the refinery increased exports of residual products such as straight-run fuel oil, while exports of finished products such as jet fuel and gas oil dropped, according to shipping trade analytics from Kpler. Data shows that Nigeria's gasoline imports rose by 24% on the month in April to 157,000 barrels per day. Dangote had initially planned to shut its gasoline-making residue fluid catalytic cracking unit for 30-day maintenance in June. Tullow Oil PLC has said its unit, Tullow Gabon Limited, has agreed to sell its entire stake in Tullow Oil Gabon SA to Gabon Oil Company for $300 million in cash. The oil and gas producer said Tullow Oil Gabon holds all of its non-operated working interests in Gabon. Shares in Tullow Oil were up 14% to 15.64 pence in London on Tuesday afternoon. Tullow said the sale represents 10,000 barrels of oil per day of 2025 production guidance and around 36 million barrels of 2P reserves. And British luxury brand Burberry says it plans to cut 1,700 jobs, around a fifth of its global workforce, to cut costs as part of efforts to revive its performance, sending its shares higher. Burberry is in the early stages of a turnaround plan led by CEO Joshua Schulman, who is seeking to reverse the brand's years of underperformance versus luxury rivals. Schulman, formerly at Jimmy Choo, took over last year and shifted Burberry's strategy and marketing to focus more on iconic trench coats and scarves after the...
All right, there you have it. The time is 10 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. This early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the two bilateral agreement aimed to boost investment in Morocco and develop the countries in pharmaceutical production. Now, the expert says the growing cooperation between the two countries is bearing tangible fruit in the form of diversified Chinese investment. We might take a lesson.
Partnership involves Bank of Africa and Jiangxi Geoengineering Investment Group. The agreement reflects China's growing interest in the Moroccan market and highlights a shared ambition to position the kingdom as a strategic gateway for investment across Africa.
Today, we are witnessing an important evolution of the economic ties between China and Morocco. The visit of this delegation has allowed us to sign two partnerships between a Chinese investment firm and a Moroccan bank to accompany some Chinese investments on the African continent.
The second agreement, signed by Morocco Coopher Pharma and China's Jemincare Pharmaceutical Group, aims to develop innovative therapeutic solutions, enhance industrial capabilities, and promote technology exchange.
The second convention is also very important and structuring for the infrastructure and sanitary sovereignty of the kingdom. It will allow us to make products and active ingredients for Moroccan pharmaceuticals thanks to this cooperation.
Experts say the growing cooperation between the two countries is bearing tangible fruit in the form of diversified Chinese investments.
Chinese investments in Morocco are growing considerably. Their total exceeds $10 billion in main technological sectors like automobile and auto part manufacturing in Tangier. There are also several ongoing projects between the two countries in promising domains involving the latest technology. This industrial partnership is set to create tens of thousands of new jobs throughout Morocco.
China is Morocco's third largest trading partner worldwide and the largest in Asia. There has been growing interest among Chinese companies in the Moroccan market, particularly the automotive, renewable energy, textile and agro-industry sectors.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to South Africa, is that South Africa's data shows that mining production declined by 2.8% in March this year on a year-on-year basis. Now, while a negative print is still a market improvement of the 9.7% decrease in mining production registered in February.
Contributors for the latest production figures were platinum group metals and gold. The lower gold production in March coincides with a time when gold prices were hitting all-time highs.
It's a pity that we,
the Prime Minister said,
the production from our, you know, our old, you know, very deep mines, predominantly operated by Harmony and Sibanye, that, you know, their production was also impacted by, there were a few fatalities, unfortunately, during the quarter. And, yeah, Sibanye's production has really been a big disappointment in the gold sector. I mean, Harmony has really, run its, complex deep mines a lot better than Sibanye, over the last few years. And you continue to see operational challenges at Sibanye's mines.
Proctor says the declines in gold and PGMs were also to be expected, given heavy rainfall that had taken place in the north of the country, and that platinum miners had generally not been producing at their optimum in recent times.
Production reports from the platinum miners were pretty weak generally. I mean, again, you did see certain operational issues, such as mining through lower grade reefs, but still, from Anglo American Platinum, I mean, their Amanda, one of the shafts at their Amanda Build mine flooded in February, so you would have seen that impact continue into March as they tried to, get the water out of the shaft and be able to restart mining. So, I mean, there wasn't too much in terms of operational issues.
The latest March mining production print is the fifth consecutive monthly decline on an annual basis, and there are concerns that it may end up contributing negatively to the first quarter GDP number.
In fact, mining output shrank by 4.5% on a quarter-on-quarter basis in the first 3 months of 2025, worse than the 0.7% decline in the previous quarter, making it a key drag on GDP growth for the first quarter.
While the gold price has been the star player in terms of commodity price increases, it's very much subject to market sentiment, which is currently highly variable in an uncertain global economic environment, having declined to around $3,100 an ounce currently, compared to the heady number of $3,500 an ounce achieved in recent.
Right, there you have it. The time is 15 minutes in the 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that AU-Lesotho partnership exploring new avenues for cooperation.
Matigane has welcomed the European Union delegation in Maseru. That's more than half of the 27 EU member states who are in Maseru as part of the celebration of the Europe Month. The highlight of the Lesotho EU celebrations will see the signing of three transformative programs to the tune of 10 million euros, approximately 205 million rands. These projects are earmarked for an inclusive Lesotho renewable energy and the cooperation facility and support measures for civil society. Europe says they are in the Mountain Kingdom to pledge their unwavering commitment to the Lesotho EU's decades-long solidarity, collaboration and mutual growth. This year's occasion is significant as it commemorates 25 years of the African Union, European Union partnership, an intercontinental alliance that has championed peace, sustainable development and people-centered government. Both parties wish to see mutual and meaningful benefits. For more on this, we're joined by Head of EU Mission in Lesotho, Ambassador Paula Amadai. Very good evening to you. Thank you for your time, Ambassador. The EU delegation is in Maseru. As we look to the important celebrations that will be taking place, how significant is such a development?
Thank you very much for your interest. Every year we celebrate a partnership dialogue. It's an opportunity to look back at what has happened in the course of the year and plan for the future. It's an opportunity to look at the situation regional and global level and check our notes. So this year the interest is related to the fact that we had the largest ever delegation from European member states in Maseru. As you have mentioned it, 14 delegation came from Pretoria to take part in this exercise. And indeed, traditionally the dialogue is also accompanied by a cooperation event, the launch of the yearly cooperation program, and to the tune this year of 16 million euro, that is 337 million rand. So at the same time, we look at political development, at regional and global affairs, trade relation, but also at the Lesotho EU cooperation program.
So with the EU being a vital partner for Lesotho for decades, and you know we're looking at providing humanitarian aid to diplomatic engagement through initiatives like the recently signed Samoa Agreement, how best should one interpret this growing and strengthening of relations between the country?
The European Union has had a formal relation with Lesotho for the past 50 years. In 2026, we will celebrate our anniversary. And every year, we try to infuse new energy into the relation. We continue, we are a long-standing partner of Lesotho, but we try our best also to explore new avenues for cooperation and to as good friends and good partners do.
So, with the US no longer a reliable partner and Lesotho now listed among countries in which the Trump administration wants to close its embassies, canceling of aid, imposing those steep tariffs, and the threat that could have on Lesotho's already embattled textile sector, do you think that this is now providing an opportunity for the EU? Is there an opportunity in terms of expansion and leverage?
I think it's a mutual opportunity to look better maybe at some of the avenues of cooperation that in the past have not been used to their full potential. I'm thinking, for instance, to the economic partnership agreement between the SADC country and the EU. Lesotho, like the other SADC country, enjoys full quota and tariff-free access to the European market, the largest single market in the world. Yet,
right, there you have it. Now, in Mexico, is that despite global trade tension, sales for Chinese electric vehicles are booming in developing markets, particularly in Mexico, now where demand has surged this year. We might take a listen.
Mexicans seeking to purchase new vehicles this year have many choices of brands and available technology. The country is located near the massive U.S. market and always ranks among the top 10 vehicle manufacturers in the world. Among global automakers, this Latin American giant is considered a sophisticated and highly competitive market. Since 2020, Chinese automakers have increased their presence in Mexico, and Chinese-made vehicles have been on the rise here. President of BYD Mexico, Ray Zhu, sees significant opportunities for increasing sales in Mexico. He says this is true for light vehicles using combustion engines and fully electric pickup trucks.
Based on the data, I think in Mexico every year there are about between 15% of 18% of the new cars sold are pickup, which means annually it has the potential to have more than 200,000 units pickup. So this is a big, huge market.
For more than 15 years, Mexico has charged a 20% tariff on all vehicles imported into the country. But that has not deterred the rising demand.
Chinese vehicles are now seen all across Mexico, especially in the largest cities, like here in the capital. Hola, señor. Hola, ¿qué tal?
Sales of Chinese vehicles in Mexico have been on the rise in recent years, and they now account for 12% of total market sales in this country. The president of Mexico's National Association of Automotive Distributors, Guillermo Rosales, says Chinese vehicles are popular in Mexico because they offer good prices and attractive new technologies.
The average price for a new car in Mexico is around $27,000. Products made in China fall into this price range nicely. This gives Chinese vehicles a strong acceptance here. One out of every five cars sold in Mexico are made in China.
Rosales expects no major drop this year in Chinese vehicle sales in Mexico.
Sometimes there is a deficiency in available parts. It's important that they listen to consumers and distributors alike.
All right, there you have it. The time is 24 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the three-day summit in Togo wrapped up with African leaders discussing urgent solution to the continent's mounting debt crisis. Now, organized by the African Union Commission's Economic Development Department, the conference explored debt restructuring, sustainable financing, and economic recovery strategies. We might take a listen.
The conference so that it doesn't end up being just another talking show.
Thank you very much for having me. And yes, a very important conference taking place here in Lome. I think three things we need to consider. We had a very powerful opening segment by two heads of state, the president of Togo and the president of Ghana, who gave very powerful speeches indicating just how deep the debt crisis is on the continent and the need for a renewed restructuring mechanism. And I think that political will and that political message should send resounding message across the continent that at the heads of state level, they need to take this situation extremely seriously because it is going to mortgage and challenge the development pathway for the continent in the future. The second one is that we have a number of central bank governors and ministers of finance who are deeply involved in engagements with institutions like the International Monetary Fund, who are charged and tasked with their debt restructuring. And as we know it right now, the existing debt restructuring mechanism under the common framework is not fit for purpose. This is a key message that also came out today on the first day of the conference from these ministers of finance and central bank governors. So hopefully, at the end of these 3 days, we will have some sort of commitment to move away from this common framework that's not working for Africa and towards a more intergovernmental participatory process where both creditors, all creditors and all borrowers can sit down around the table. And right. Lastly, I think the agenda on debt restructuring does not an agenda on debt restructuring that does not undermine Agenda 2063 and the pathway to which our economic transformation is geared towards.
All right, so I'm keen actually on that political message in that you talked about that was communicated today. We've had some staggering figures being thrown around about Africa's debt. So we have over 20 countries nearing or facing debt distress. What are some of the key strategies these countries should look at to manage their debt more sustainably?
I think first and foremost, at the heads of state level, we need to come together and start coordinating and having a coherent common message on what the debt crisis actually is on the continent. And hopefully this conference will give us that after the end of these 3 days, and that political messaging that we have been provided with by the heads of state from Ghana and Togo. Secondly, it's very important that countries that are entering restructuring, Zambia, Ghana, Ethiopia, and now Cote d'Ivoire, that they ring-fence and protect public services to ensure that these resources are not diverted away from the much-needed development agenda in order to provide resources for creditors. And the third and final one is really to call out the ineffectiveness of the existing debt restructuring mechanism under the common framework that excludes certain creditors like multilateral lenders and certain types of private creditors, which sort of undermines the ability of countries to approach the common framework and get their debt restructured. So we also need to make sure that there's a correct environment for countries that want to seek debt restructuring, that they have that correct environment. And a fourth strategy would be to ask and request en masse as 55 African countries for a debtor moratorium or a debt service suspension with non-interest rate bearing whilst restructuring is going on, so that these...
Right, there you have it. The time is 28 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to Zambia, is that this government says it will introduce a new bill to parliament that will classify a preference of medicine as an economic crime. Now, Acting Home Affairs Minister Ambrose Rufuma says government wants to make this law to deter people from stealing medicines in the health institutions. We might take a listen.
Health sector, where the U.S. government cut about 1.4 billion kwacha of its annual support. Interventions are being put in place to win back investor confidence in the country. Today, a group of cabinet ministers held a high-level meeting with members of the diplomatic corps to update them on the forensic audit into the theft of medicines. Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation Minister Mulambo Haimbe informed the diplomats that government has concluded the forensic audit into the theft of medicines.
The President of the Republic of Zambia himself has taken particular and keen interest in this matter. And the timeline has been such that from the initial concerns that were raised, steps were taken in consultation with some of you, our cooperating partners, to put in place a mechanism through a forensic audit of identifying where these challenges in the health sector have arisen and where they sit.
And Acting Home Affairs Minister Ambrose Lufuma said government plans to enforce laws that would deter people.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Omudiha utekirwaka guna ii matina omjo. Chikao shafata na
medicine.
This sort of situation and instituted measures, this is why there were terms of reference that we're talking about, that there is supposed to be a forensic audit, and all that is meant to ensure that we put a stop to this pilferage.
Health Minister Elijah Muchima was also present.
Anybody who steals medicines is a killer. Total killer. All of us stand to condemn such habits.
Gene President,
what has been happening in the past should be given a stop with immediate effect.
And Egyptian ambassador to Zambia, Mayada Essam, commended government for undertaking a forensic audit in the health sector.
So we commend the Zambian government for that, for their response quick and decisive response without any interference from our side. And we are looking forward to extend the drug deal or renew it and continue our cooperation in that side.
I commend the government and His Excellency the President for the very bold step of commissioning not just a forensic audit, but outsourcing it to a globally renowned firm who has a fantastic record around the world and in Zambia.
Right. There you have it. Lastly, in Zambia again, is that the higher-powered Chinese delegation is in the country to fast-track implementation of agreement reached between Zambia and China. We might take a listen to this update.
Dilema's recent visit to China, one of his stops was in Xinjiang region, a place where cotton fields stretch far and wide, powered by cutting-edge agricultural technology designed for high yields. Inspired by what he saw, President Dilema now wants this technology replicated in Zambia, especially for farmers under the outgrowth scheme supported by the Zambia-China Mulungushi Textiles. To turn this vision into reality, a high-powered Chinese delegation led by Xinjiang Autonomous Region Chairman is in Zambia and has already held talks with President Dilema at State House.
The, our visit this time aims to, you know, to follow through on the important common understandings, Mr. President, that you have reached with President Xi. Xinjiang also has identified 10 major industry clusters based on our resource endowments and within industrial capabilities. And for last year, Mr. President, Xinjiang's GDP reached $274.4 billion.
Mr. Ekin has proposed the formation of special dedicated teams on both sides as a strategic move aimed at boosting regular communication and deepening bilateral cooperation.
I'd like to propose that competent or department authority from your side will be identified so that our Xinjiang side actually can work with it. On the Xinjiang side, its provincial foreign affairs office will be the lead competent authorities to get in touch with your side.
President Dilema, in response, expressed gratitude to China for unlocking its vast market to Zambia and other African nations.
This opportunity for us in Zambia on the African continent now have to export into the Chinese market without huge restrictions. This is appreciated. Please pass this message to my dear brother, Elder President Xi Jinping, that we would like to continue the trajectory, but therein lies the opportunity for joint ventures. Right, in Zambia, in Chinese businesses, I guess some of the colleagues in the delegation can see the opportunities to invest together here and then export back into China and other markets. This is really what will help us to grow our economy.
The president says Zambia is keen to tap into smart agriculture technologies, especially for cultivating high-value crops like cotton.
Advancements through your research and development, early maturing, high yielding is very important to our own project Mulungushi Textiles, which we are doing a cotton outgrow with a factory that we jointly own between China and Zambia in our Kawe region of Zambia. So we would like to exploit, Minister, a deeper relationship with my team here on their expertise on areas such as the cotton growing, processing, and all of those issues that will make our joint business, Zambia-China, successful.
Right, there you have it. Now the time is 36 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. So we'll take a listen to a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through what is happening within the country.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.5. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had...
Welcome back. The time is 37 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. Now, to start off locally, it's one of the lead story from our newspapers today. Please do not forget to rather ask for the newspaper, subscribe to the WhatsApp channel that is Eagle FM Media House, and then you can be able to catch up with the newspaper. Now, to start, is that the 7,000 Namibian dollars worth of cattle stolen from Namibia to Angola. So now the cattle value at approximately 783,000 Namibian dollars were stolen from Saiwe village in Namibian's Kavango East region, Dumukwe constituency, and driving across the border into the Angola on 10 May 2025. Now, Deputy Commissioner Boniface Kanyetu confirmed the incident to the village newspaper. Now, according to Kanyetu, armed suspect of contracting a cattle herder at the grazing area. Now, two of the suspects were reportedly armed with firearms, while another carried a traditional axe. The group drove away 87 head of cattle, forcing the herder to accompany them into Angola. Now, the herder, Dara David Kachunona, was allegedly released on 11 May and managed to return to his post in Namibia, where he had alerted the cattle herd owners. Now, Chakunona is currently recovering in a local hospital after being assaulted assaulted the previous Saturday by 5 armed men believed to be Angolan nationals. Now, in response, 7 Namibian cattle owned and 2 Angolan herders across into Angola on the same day is in an attempt to recover the stolen livestock. Now, the 7 cattle owners have been identified as Ndieve Agustinis Kavinja, Poroto Paulus Haingura, Thitaka Paulinus, Katembo Lucas, Kambosho Semba, Mutaveni Muningi, and John. They have not yet returned, and they are also about to remain unknown, a growing concern for the residents of Mukwe. Now, the stolen cattle have not been recovered, and the suspect believed to be Angolan national remain identified. Meanwhile, Mukwe Constituency Councillor Damien Mungabai has urged community members to exercise extreme caution when employing cattle herders, particularly those from Angola and Zambia. Now, he emphasized the importance of background check and proper vetting before entrusting individuals with livestock responsibilities. Mungabai stressed that 9 men from the neighboring Dionga community across the river is pursuit of the stolen livestock. As of today, 14, none of those individuals have returned, and their whereabouts remain unknown. That what he said on the 14th of May. Now, this has caused great concern and emotional distress among those families and the broader community. Now, according to Mungabai, the suspects are believed to be part of the foreign criminal network operating from within Angola and possibly selling the stolen cattle in Zambia. Now, he warned the incident reflect a growing pattern of organized cross-border cattle theft, which continues to affect farmers in a border community. Now, Mungabai noted that some individuals involved in those crimes might be the former herders who were trusted and employed by local farmers. Now, he called on traditional leaders, community elders, and local community to reinforce community vigilance and strengthen employment screening processes. Now, by working together, community can help prevent criminal element from exploiting their trust and threatening their livestock. That's what he said. Now, in response to the ongoing crisis, a joint team from the Namibian Police, that's NAMPO, and the Namibian Defence Force, NDF, has entered Angola with permission and under the supervision of Angolan security forces in a mission to locate and rescue the 9 Namibian villagers who crossed the border in pursuit of stolen cattle but never returned. Nandionga village, where most of the men are from, is located near the Namibia-Angola border, approximately 190 kilometer seats of Rundu. Now, the Angolan side of the border was previously under the control of UNITA rebels for many years. Now, moving on to the next item is that the Bank of Namibia announced the issuance of the modified 50 Namibian dollars banknote, according to the governor of the Bank of Namibia, Jonas Gawaheb, highlighted that the modification aligned with global best practice to combat counterfeit and support efficient cash handling. The governor also elaborated on how this modification reflects both market demand and, of course, natural evolution of the national currency. Now, this Benedicta Seaman got into the conversation with economist analyst Trianus Shunula to give more clarity on that specific update. We might take a listen.
So as we are continuing with our early morning scoop, so today we are going to look, or today we are going to talk about a release modified $50 banknote. So it's why we really want to understand why it needs to be modified, or what was the reason the $50 has to be modified, and the importance to the Namibian public and payment system. So today, like the Bank of Namibia has launched a new improved 50 banknotes. So the bank has not given many details on why the changes has or are being made. However, observations, EKFM is that it now has a norm to promote the presidential legacy on our notes, leaving our currency to be dominated by presidents and less of anything else that represents Namibia. So on this, we are going to engage with one of the bank officials to give us more clarity and what the modification is all about, which is Trianus Shulula. So good morning, Trianus Shulula, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, morning.
I'm good. So, Mr. Shulula, I would like to ask, what is the significance of the additional figures to the existing $50 banknote?
Okay. Basically, the new $50 banknote, as we've seen, the modification is almost exactly like the previous 50 that was already in circulation. Mm-hmm. The mostly the detail that has changed on the new $50 note is just the signature, because normally the current Bank of Namibia governor is supposed to actually sign any money issued within the country. Mm-hmm. So it's more like legacy for Mr. Gawaheb.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So what is the cost involved in the modification of the $50 note? Does it contribute to the strengthening of Namibia's financial system?
Okay. That depends now, because let us say in some other countries, whenever they issue out new money or whenever they print new money, mm-hmm. they would actually have a specific amount of money, mm-hmm. or of actually assets such as gold that they get to back their currency against. Which means if they they print out $50 million worth of $50 notes, mm-hmm. then they should have a reserve with assets worth $50 million, maybe against gold or whatever commodity they might have. But for now, we can say that for one to consider all costs, they will actually now include now the printing fees and even the shipping, because the printing was to, like, normally doesn't happen within the country. It happens somewhere abroad. Mm-hmm. They have to incur costs now about transport and all these other fees that are actually involved in printing new money.
Mm-hmm. So which means what was changed on the note is just the signature of because I know it was Hendrik Witbooi on it, like his signature. So now they change it to the other governor now.
Yeah, so it is just the governor's legacy, one may say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you have kept track of the money, at first it was only Mr. Tom Arendo on all the notes, mm-hmm. Namibian notes in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And later on it was changed to, some notes were changed to Mr. Shimi, and now we have Mr. Gavahab that is also now appending his signature to all these new currencies or new notes that have been printed out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I would like to ask that is the Bank of Namibia following a certain trend of promoting presidential legacy on Namibian money, or do we expect Dr. Nangolo Mpumpas to follow and Dr. Notumbo on the face of the Namibian currency, if you may to speak?
Okay, let's say for the Namibian economy, we have a lot of money or currency in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, in some other countries such as the United States, for instance,
mm-hmm.
they have had Mr. Benjamin Franklin on their notes for more than 100 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been using the same note, the same money, I mean, the same face on their notes for all this time. But they have not really made any changes. But for us now, we try to, or our leaders try to actually put I can say that they make modifications sometimes, putting on the former heads of state and also some other modifications such as now changing the governor's signature. But I am not sure now if we really, the Bank of Namibia is really following a certain principle, because you know when you are printing out money like this, you are actually, because the $50 note,
mm-hmm.
there are already $50 notes within circulation.
Mm-hmm.
In the economy, there are already $50 notes. But we are printing another one that looks exactly like the previous one. The only difference is the signature. But one would now have to consider liquidity when they are actually talking about now issuing new money, because the central bank is supposed to, like, ensure stability in the money supply, and that requires planning and well-being of the Namibian economy.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow creating or issuing new money now creates a lot of liquidity or, like, money flow in the market. And when something is mostly supplied like that, it becomes worthless, you know,
mm-hmm.
for devaluation. Not necessarily worthless, but devaluation. For something to have value, it must be scarce to obtain.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for more details or for more information that you gave us today, Shelula. I would like to say have a blessed day ahead, and I would like to say thank you for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop. Have a blessed day ahead.
All right. Thank you. Keep well.
Okay.
All right, and moving on to the next item is that the role of traditional leaders and their contribution to the development of the economy remain unclear. However, my colleague Benedicta Simeon spoke with Martin Elago, who is a headman, to discuss the role of traditional leaders and traditional authorities to the society and their contribution to the economy. We might take a lesson.
So, yeah, Let's continue with our early morning scoop. So today we are going to talk about the traditional authorities in Namibia. Like, what are their roles to the society and to the economy as well? So as we know, the traditional authorities in Namibia play a crucial role in both society and the economy. They are responsible for maintaining social stabilities, preserving cultural identity, resolving conflicts, and ensuring sustainable use of natural resources. So additionally, they can also act as conduits between government and local communities, promoting public participation in development planning. So, and also, as we know, that traditional authorities are the custodians of customary law and maintaining the traditional orders. It is not clear how traditional leaders go beyond their roles and contribute to economic development. So today we'll look at the context of the roles of traditional leaders and what roles do they play in the addressing the current economic problems. So today we are going to engage with one of the headmen, Malten Elago. So good morning, Malten Elago, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good day, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I'm good. So, Malten Elago, I would like to ask, as a traditional leader, what is your main role to the economic development of your constituency?
Well, thank you very much for the question. Maybe the first thing is perhaps to indicate that what I'm leading is actually a village. So I'm a village headman.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the constituency, as we know in political terms. Yes, we have many roles that we play in the communities. When I'm saying we, I'm talking about the traditional leaders in general, especially headmen. As you have alluded to from the beginning, we maintain, or we try to maintain law and order, you know, peace and tranquility in the community, you know, resolving disputes and trying to keep families and clans and community members in harmony with one another. In addition to that, we also, you know, we try to also look after the well-being of our people in many other ways. That will depend really on initiatives, you know, from either the headman himself or herself, or those community members who may, you know, be having good ideas pertaining to development, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so is it the right for the trading leaders to step out of their role and initiate the projects that addresses the needs of their people?
We are actually obliged by the conditions, you know, to see if we can do a thing or two for the benefit of our people or for the welfare of our people. Besides our role in terms of government structure, you know, when the community would like to come up with a certain development, the village actually, you know, comes together under the leadership of the headman or headwoman.
Mm-hmm.
They identify a need and propose, you know, like a solution to the government. And that goes then through the structure. First to the center. The center is actually a grouping of more than one village.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that idea has been agreed upon, then it is forwarded to the constituency, where it will go to the CDC, that is the Constituency Development Committee. And then it goes up to the regional council, the regional development coordinating committee, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, those ideas that are accepted, they are taken up then to central government and the relevant ministries. that are the custodians of those functions. But then, besides that, because that is like a requirement of a system, you know, depending how the headman or headwoman wants development for his or her people, a headman can come up with an idea which, you know, they share with the community, their own community, and then, you know, if they can afford that particular project or initiative, they may, from their own sources as a village, actually contribute
mm-hmm.
and then carry out the certain project or program.
Mm-hmm.
That may take different forms, maybe in the form of a youth grouping from the village. It could involve elders and so on and so forth. It could involve those that are gainfully employed and therefore earning an income monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends really how the headman and the village organize themselves
mm-hmm.
and, the kind of development that they want.
Okay. So, okay, they say the supreme traditional leader serves as the representative of the traditional authorities. So, do we really have roles of traditional authorities in the forest management? What are those roles do we have in the forest management?
The forest management.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of that, besides communities where we have declared conservancies
mm-hmm.
Where the natural resources are actually legally protected. Even in areas where you don't have a conservancy, we also have the mother law from the Ministry of Environment that protects forest
mm-hmm.
Environment, including forestry, including wild animals, including, the cutting down of trees and all that. That law is there.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's very difficult to implement, especially in an area that are like a commonage, they belong to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's people that are obedient to the law, that are easy to work with. But where you have those that are disobedient to the law, you sometimes encounter difficulties controlling their behavior as far as the environment is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So my last question is, are the roles of traditional leaders given less attention post-independence in addressing border socio-economic issues, or how can we uplift their roles and coexist with the government?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think in the first place, we have the role played by headmen and headwomen, which really supplements actually what the government is already doing. If it were not for the village headman and man, government would have its hands full, trying to not only keep law and order.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs, and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Supplements actually what the government is already doing. If it were not for the village headman and man, government would have its hands full, trying to not only keep law and order, but also
you know, bring about the development and on keeping peace and tranquility in the villages. The head men do a lot. The head women do a lot, actually, in supplementing what the government is doing. And therefore, with the current situation where the villages, the traditional leaders at the village level do not get any financial support from anybody, one really, really relies on oneself to do whatever needs to be done. But it should not really be like that, because what we do is for the good of the nation. We are meeting government halfway. Although this is left to the traditional authorities, what is being done is for public good, and therefore headman actually deserves more support than currently is the case. Mm-hmm. Now you use your own resources, you know, to address issues and disputes in your village, whether you are, going to meetings and conferences outside of your village representing your people. You use your own finances, you know, whether you are hitchhiking, you have to have a transport fare to pay for your transport. If you happen to be lucky to have a vehicle, you have to fork out something to fill your tent to be able to attend those conferences. Mm-hmm. But you are not doing that for yourself, but for your people, mm-hmm. for the public good. And therefore, support is necessary, very, very necessary.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, some of us, are leading very old villages, meaning they have been in existence for a long time, and therefore there are no new lands that you can give or allocate to new people to get, the $600 that you are supposed to get. And therefore, you don't get any income from the village. Instead, it is you, actually, who is, helping the people, because you are using your own finances, your own energy, your own, intelligence and all that. And therefore, it's not really very, very normal. At least, we end up subsidizing government instead of government subsidizing us or helping us or meeting us halfway, one way or the other, not necessarily really us saving the villages, but actually using our own resources to help the people. If you become a headman or woman and you were not aware what you are getting into, you will be in for a surprise, because you would realize that there is really nothing to gain, but everything to lose, so to speak, because you are using your resources to support your community. The only thing you get, of course, is the respect of your community, especially if they are happy with your leadership. The wisdom that you get actually dealing with the elders and attending to different disputes in the community. You learn on a daily basis, and you become much wiser and much more experienced, actually, in community matters and human relations, actually, in general.
Okay, thank you so much, Martin Elago, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop. I would like to say have a productive day ahead.
Thank you very, very much. Likewise, ma'am.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, there you have it. The time is 5 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Namibian Agronomy Board has committed to invest approximately 250 million Namibian dollars over the next 5 years, intending to develop the country's crop value chain. Now, the project will also include crop of citrus varieties. Now, this was announced by Namibian Agronomy Board Chief Executive Officer Fedges Amazi during a strategic engagement with industry stakeholders aimed at unlocking the potential of Namibian citrus industry and strengthening value chain development. Namazi also revealed that Namibian Agronomy Board has reaffirmed its mission to better align with its strategic focus of the next 5 years. Now, according to him, the board aimed to advise the agronomy and horticulture sectors through effective legislation and targeted facilitation. Now, he added that in order to enhance the value of crop sector, Namibian Agronomic Board will be prioritizing dedicated facilitation, cutting-edge research and development, while ensuring a dynamic regulatory framework that responds to the evolving needs of the industry. Now, he emphasized the citrus sector potential to create jobs and diversify the country's export base. Now, when we talk about the citrus industry, we are talking about the potential, about jobs, about foreign exchange earning, and most importantly, about transforming the sector to benefit our farmers and the national economy. That's what he said. Now, citrus is the third most consumed fruit in Namibia after apples and bananas, yet the country remains a net importer. According to the Namibian Agronomic Board, 96% of the country's citrus consumption is met through imports, costing approximately 57.9 million Namibian dollar annual. Despite this, there is a growing level of domestic citrus production. Commercial cultivation takes place primarily in the Coast Central South Orange River production zones. Now, this year, an estimated 1,783 tons of citrus are expected to be harvested, with approximately 150,515 commercial citrus trees planted nationwide. Now, of this produce, 70% is sold through formal markets, while 30% is distributed via formal channels, the board said. Now, oranges are the most commonly consumed and produced citrus fruits in Namibia, followed by soft citrus, that is nalkes. Now, key export destination include South Africa, Angola, generating over 23.9 million Namibian dollars in earning in 2024. Now, the country also import citrus planting materials worth over 136 million Namibian dollars, placing it among the top 10 agricultural import costs. Now, to move on to the next item is that the two local Namibian artists, Joe Lodge and Lanate Musikumbili, have received a sponsorship from Red Mulchen Bank to participate in the LMB Latitudes Art Fair in Johannesburg. Now, the art fair in Johannesburg is one of the international events that brings together thousands of exhibitors from across the world to showcase their art and sell it. Now, this was received at the media event yesterday, which saw the support and sponsorship of two local Namibians. Now, this my colleague David Shombe, who also attended the event, spoke to one of the communication manager of the FNB. We might take a listen.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development, and we are also looking at the aspect which has been emphasized, particularly in the new administration, which is creativity and support of art in Namibia. Yeah, it was indicated that RMB has supported two artists from Namibia under Project Room just to partake in an art fair event in Johannesburg, South Africa. For us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with a representative from RMB just to engage us. Good morning, ma'am, and how are you?
Good. I'm good. Thank you. And you? So I'm Kirsty Watermeyer from RMB Namibia, and we're really excited because today we're marking what is happening with two Namibian artists traveling to South Africa to participate in what is the biggest art fair on the continent. RMB Namibia has done a handover to the project room to facilitate the selection, the sending, the accommodating of two artists along with their art.
Yeah.
And the reason that this is important for us is because two Namibian artists going to such a massive international art fair for the continent means they have opportunities to connect with buyers, with galleries across the continent, and obviously help to showcase their work and hopefully sell their work as well.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get into contact with Project Room Namibia, and for how long you have been supporting artists as a head of Bing, or maybe to say so?
We are very, for as long as I can remember, we have been supporting arts. It's something that's very close to our heart, because art is such an important part of an economy, and it's a representation of our legacy. And so we've always been supporting the artists, but this is our third year of sending Namibian artists to the Henri Latitudes Art Fair through the Project Renovia.
Yeah, when you're looking at the Namibian government and you're also looking at the new Minister of Education, she emphasized more on supporting of creative industry, which have been neglected a bit when you look compared to previous years. What is your feeling when you realize that Namibian politicians, young people, they are starting to realize the importance of creativity? What is your view on that?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's so important because our artists need a platform. And for so long, our artists have been mirroring to us. You know, they create a mirror for what's happening in society. They help us unpack what we're going through, what we've been through, and hopefully what our future looks like. So we need our artists because they give a tangible voice, something that we can see about what's happening in society, and they create a space to hold our legacy. So it is wonderful for me. Namibian artists have been doing this work for so many years without a lot of support, and it's really great to hear that finally more and more Namibians are realizing that we need to protect and support our artists for the role that they play in our society and in our economy.
Yes, maybe just to end on that, looking at the government, private sector, even NGOs, what are some of additional mechanisms which need to be done in order to strengthen creative industry, particularly art and culture?
So, you know, an event like this is really important, and handing over and finances and supporting through your corporate social responsibility is a good way. It's a way. But another really important way that NGOs, that private sector, that individuals can consider is also buying Namibian art. You know, when you go into Namibian businesses and you see just printed from the internet art, it breaks my heart a little bit because we have wonderful artists that need to be supported. And something that RMB is part of the First Rand Group, and we have got one of the most impressive art collections in Namibia because we believe that it's also important to really help support the artists in that way by purchasing their artwork. So if you were to travel through and walk through our buildings, you would see some really special art from some of our very well-known names right through to up and coming. We've recently commissioned a work of art by the grandson of John Moafangeo, and he's busy making that for us right now. And that's another way that people can really get involved in supporting the artists, is actually purchasing their work.
Indeed. Maybe just your last words, particularly to those young people who have interest in pursuing their passion, which is in art, creative industry, but there's a little bit of fear or there's a little bit of barrier, particularly from views, you know, parents, when, you know, in Namibia, when you're saying, I'm going to go into this area, there's a bit of criticism. What is your message to those people who think they have talent, but they have a little bit of skepticism in order for them to follow that area? What is your message to them?
I think it's understandable why people have a little bit of skepticism, because it's scary to go into a space where you will not be supported and you might not be able to have bread on your table. Because at the end of the day, you know, we want to be able to all live a good and comfortable life and be able to provide for our families. And so there's a lot of fear around it. I also understand why parents would be afraid if their child says, I'm an artist. But the doors are opening up and there's a lot more opportunities. Don't be afraid of this, because if it is your passion, it will come looking for you. You know, I've spoken to people in the past who were artists who tried to say, I'm going to go into something different. And they say their passion comes looking for them because it's what you were meant to do. I think that everyone's got a little bit of creativity in them. I think it's important for us to pursue that because it's part of who we are and how we express ourselves to the world. Some people have more creativity than others. And those people, if they try and hide away from that or deny that, they're not going to be being true to themselves. And I think it'll haunt them a little bit. And so for those reasons, you got to stand for who you are. You got to follow your passion. You've got to follow your dreams. It's important. The world wants to see who you are.
Thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Awesome. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
All right, there you have it, listeners. The time is 15 minutes in the of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that on Wednesday, the NIPDB, in partnership with Bank of Namibia, launched Namibia's inaugural foreign direct investment report under the theme policy progress and potential strengthening Namibia's investment ecosystem. Now, the report explores how foreign investments contribute to economic growth, job creation, and central development in the country. Now, let's listen to Nangula Wanja, the Chief Executive Officer at the Namibian Investment Promotion and Development Board, on what she has to say on this.
As we ended up with. Quickly on NIPDB, we have got two mandates, investment development promotion and facilitation and MSME development. That is private sector. And guess what? MSMEs are also investors. Many times we think MSMEs are MSMEs. MSMEs are investors. They are just small investors that we want to grow into big investors. And if we are not deliberate about supporting to grow them into big investors, we have a challenge. So yes, we look after MSMEs for two reasons. Number one, they are small investors. Number two, if you have got big investors and there are no small investors to plug into, then that benefit of the big investment will not trickle down to the economy. You will not have as many jobs as you can get because the real employment creator are MSMEs. So the role that we play, we say first, let's look at the role of FDI, and I'm not going to talk a lot about that one because the governor has spoken about why do we need FDI. So we're talking about investment, and I wanted to put a caveat here. Why are we talking about FDI? Total investment information, unfortunately, is not readily available. How we got lucky with getting FDI is because the management of FDI is really FDI flow is managed at Bank of Namibia. So Bank of Namibia tracks which money is coming and leaving Namibia. And because of that, we have gotten the data. But everything else that is happening in the ecosystem outside of FDI, we don't have it. And that is why the report is one-sided to FDI. We would definitely like to see a report that is complete. And yes, at NIPDB, we are trying to bring together as much data as we can about who are the investors. Please register with us so that we can see what the total economy looks like, but that will take time. So from a FDI point of view, why do we need FDI? Job creation, local supply chain, import substitution, technology absorption, productivity gains, regional development, the list goes on. I think the main thing that I'm missing there, which is one of the most important, is market access. That is definitely, I think the deputy governor has talked about it. Yes, what we do, investment, we do three things. Number one, we attract. So in the attraction phase, we promote a lot. Tell people, Namibia, 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 Namibia. That's what we do. And they say, okay, fine. Namibia, where is the project? So we develop project also. And then when the projects are there, we say, we bolster them. We now tell government, there is this project. They have now come to Namibia. They can add value to our economy. So we kind of speak for those projects so that government can receive them and support them. And then we connect them. What does connection mean? Connection means there is MSMEs. There are individual Namibians that need employment. There are service providers. So we need to make sure that when the investor comes, they can be connected to the ecosystem of Namibia. So in summary, those are the phases. That one is an attraction, bolster, connection, and then what we do, we promote, we facilitate, and we do policy advocacy. So let's go back on attraction. I'm not going to go into the details of that because I want to go to the end. So if you speak to a lady called Salma at my office, she will tell you, what do we do attraction? So when you hear targeted missions, Discover Namibia sessions we are doing globally, exploration visits to see people's projects, pavilion stands in Namibia and globally, and so forth. And then missions. Without our missions abroad, there is no FDI. Because when we go there, we need to work with our embassies. We need to work with business associations in those countries, develop partnership with consultants, other friends of Namibia, honorary consuls, anybody who's there. How can you help us to promote Namibia? And then, of course, keeping a consistent presence, we have got those four offices that are then working to put all those partners together to make sure that we reach out. And
right, there you have it. Now, also, Wanja also emphasized the high employment in the country and also how they can, or the NIP can also get the, can also rather create or help to create the employment. We might take a listen to this.
Or potential than not, then we say it's a lead, and then somebody makes a final investment decision, then they start to deploy capital and then operationalize. That process takes many years. So I know people ask, okay, you've been now here forever. What have you done? Of course, there's a few things to do, but according to GIZ, they say when you make your initial contact with a potential investor, the investment decision can take up to 3 years for you to get investment decision. For you to get a first visit for them to come to country, it can take up to 2 years. So a little bit of patience required there. So yes, today we are reaping the benefit of some of the investment efforts that were made by people that were here before us. So how do we measure impact? So now that we are doing, how do we measure that all these activities that we are doing are yielding results? Number one is to look at the data that is kept at Bank of Namibia. And I think the data speaks for itself. So we can see here, especially starting from 2015, FDI was going down. So before COVID got here, our FDI was going down. So it was there going down, 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 down. It was negative before COVID even. And then here's the year of COVID. And then we see from 2021, it just started. And yes, then oil came and now we are there. And if you actually look at, if you put private account activities, this year is actually higher on a net when you include private account activity than last year. So yes, last year was, 2023 was a special year, but 2024 was good. And yeah, therefore don't say, okay, once we are there, that is there. I think that we need to consider that oil and gas, yes, we need to be realistic with our expectation. But we can see FDI is flowing. That is private account activity. Other money that is flowing out. So while FDI and others are coming, there is actually money here which is flowing out in portfolio investment. So portfolio investment are more coming out than coming in. Now, please don't quote me on this one, but I think this is some GIPF money that is going somewhere. So we need to find a home for GIPF money in Namibia. So that's basically what it means. It means GIPF money is struggling to find a home in Namibia, so it's going somewhere else. We need to find a home for GIPF money. And I think today, this morning, we had a session with financiers talking about how can we find financing for projects and a conversation about GIPF and the role that they can play. And they are playing a role. So I'm not saying they are not playing a role, but there is definitely more money that they have. And they are managing people that will retire, and they will be held accountable. So we need to make sure that our projects are able to deliver value for them. So the other thing that we look at is what we call reinvestment. The investors that are already here, are they taking their money out of Namibia or are they keeping money? So there was a time that they were taking their money, but investors are now keeping their money. That is confidence. Confidence in the government of saying, we are trusting that when we put money in Namibia, we are getting good return. Nobody will steal our money. We'll be able to expatriate it from Namibia somewhere. So that is trust of confidence in the government and what it's doing. What else do we look at? So what we look at is FDI creating jobs? So I want to speak a little bit about jobs, because again, we say, look, if FDI is not creating jobs, we are not interested. So employment growth, and I will show it to you in a manner. So there has been significant employment growth between the pre-COVID numbers and these numbers. So if you look, for example, the total employment of Namibia, according to 2018, when the NSA released their data now, between 2018 and 2023, the employment of Namibia decreased from more than 700,000 to about 500,000. But entities, enterprises that are FDI recipient, they actually recovered from COVID. So their pre-COVID numbers are more than their after COVID numbers are more than their pre-COVID numbers. So in general, about 6,800 jobs that were created. That makes up about 11.5% of the total jobs that are in the economy. And then, of course, most of them are in wholesale, retail, mining, and acquiring, as well as financial services. Let's look at that one. So that is how it looked like per year.
All right, there you have it. The time is 25 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. And this early morning scoop, we have about 5 minutes to hand over to my colleague, Tate Michael Shavari. Now, lastly, on the last item is that a recent stakeholders engagement regarding the influence of artificial intelligence in the African media indicates that there has been a positive adoption by journalists and reporters in the field to use AI tools for their specific needs in content gathering and information distribution. Now, 84% of the respondents in a recent survey confirmed they use AI to their journalistic means. Now, this means that 8 out of the 10 journalists says they use AI for their journalistic purposes. Now, the survey also reports outline. Now, the Peter Desles from the DW Academy noted that the surveyed journalist, editor, and newsroom managers from across the Southern African region. Now, this was done through a survey by the Academy. The survey was conducted between the August and October 2024 with a total of 136 respondents to the survey. Now, there were a total of 15 interviews conducted, a total of 5 per country. Now, the purpose of the survey was to understand the extent of usage, what it is being used for, and how it changes newsrooms. Now, some of the Southern African countries surveyed included Namibia, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. Now, with the rapid development in AI, things move very quickly in terms of how those platforms improved. That's what he added. Now, in terms of the respondent of the media practitioners on their daily content gathering capability, the country like Malawi displayed more men responding to the survey than women. Now, they also indicated the key statistic of the participants in the survey was that most came from broadcast medium like radio and television stations. Now, he noted that even the clear indication of whether some journalists were at traditional newsroom or whether print media made the identification process tricky. Now, very few were academics or freelancers and fast checkers. Now, this means that very few actually represented conventionally print media, that's what he added. Now, in the daily or weekly measurement of the survey, 77% confirmed that they use AI in either of those frequencies. Now, this means the AI has become the part of the daily routine of those surveys journalists. Now, even though some of those statistics vary slightly between the countries, but not sustainably, and that what he highlighted, he also said that the focusing on the training in the use of those new tools, he noted that only 24% of journalists received some form of training in those tools. Now, this translates to only 3 out of 10 people in this survey who were partially trained in the use of AI. That's what he added. Now, on that note, thank you so much for joining us today. And I wish you luck and all the best and enjoy your weekend ahead. And this is Early Morning Scoop. And this is the end of it. We'll hand over to my colleague, Tate Michael Shavari, before or after the advert. Thank you so much for tuning in and enjoy the rest of your day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
I'm only human, a flesh and blood, I'm made.
Did
you know that one in four road deaths involves a pedestrian or cyclist? This UN Global Road Safety Week, play your part in making walking and cycling safer for everyone. Look out for our vulnerable road users. Be alert and be responsible. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikao shafata na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongo tisa mwene anageshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa olonjika zeitha nina omayakuro nirandisoma yue yongeshifa yoye kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu Moambo, dengera selma, onora hita tuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM. The eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, The Catholics Imaneka Karunga, The Africans Sengfuor Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so...